Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Football Road podcast. It's been a few weeks, but I could not be more excited for this one. When nearing the beginning of the season, and technically for a lot of Arsenal and Manchester City fans, the season did start yesterday, especially for the Arsenal fans. I'm going to introduce you to our lineup for today. We have Abhishek, who's returning after a wonderful episode where we covered Liverpool. We have Arnav yet again representing Arsenal, and Arnav's probably beaming with joy today. Some silverware in the cabinet. We have Advait as usual, the analyst. And we have a new member who's going to be joining us today. Conrad, welcome to the podcast. We're really looking forward to having you. We've had multiple conversations off camera, off recording, and we're really looking forward to sort of understanding what you have to say on the Premier League. I know it's not your favorite league, but I'm hoping that you put in some interest today. So thanks for joining, Conrad. So we're just going to do a nice little season preview today, just to go over a few details before we start. We're going to be covering Arsenal, we're going to be covering Liverpool, Manchester City, United, of course, and we'd probably cover Chelsea. Let's see how that goes in terms of time. But we're going to start off with Arsenal over here. Arnav, it's been a fantastic window. We've discussed the Arsenal window in a previous episode. We saw what they did yesterday with Manchester City. It does look like they're in a position to compete. They're in a position to go head-to-head. They're probably looking like the only real title challengers this season. And I know Abhishek will have a few things to say about that later on. But Arsenal's looking really good, Arnav. Julian Timber was fantastic yesterday. Kai Havertz in the holding role, and Declan Rice is just getting up to pace. But in terms of the season itself, Arnav, what are your expectations? Is the Arsenal, sort of cavalry really looking at a title challenge? And with Champions League, how does that influence your chances?
Yeah, of course. I feel like the transfer window as well, I have no complaints with that, because definitely what we wanted as Arsenal fans and what a lot of analysts were also saying that we require, we've made those priority signings early this season. We had an amazing preseason as well. And I feel like definitely as Arsenal supporters, this is one of the best seasons to be an Arsenal fan. And I feel like we are looking to challenge every competition that we should be in, because we have strengthened the squad, because our main concern was that. And one of the major things why I feel that we can compete in multiple competitions is definitely because the signings that we made, they can play in like multiple positions, something similar to what City also replicated in their signings. That's what Arteta, I think, has taken inspiration from. Not even like the signings from this season, but also from last season. Like Vieira, we've only seen him in the number 8 or the number 10 position. But I feel like this preseason, like they rotated him with Bukayo Saka on the wing. And he had that very Bernardo Silva type touch to his game. So I feel like those small tweaks where we can like fit in players at multiple positions, Timber is playing left back, Havertz can play center forward, center mid. So I feel those options, that flexibility definitely gives us a lot of excitement to look forward to this season, because we've always experienced like one injury always like affecting the team's morale. And yesterday's win, I feel, is more important than the silverware. I feel that is just like getting the monkey off your back and helping the Arsenal players like just get over that mental block that we can win against City, because I think we had like a bad record against them. Like I think they won like 15 out of the last 16 games against us. So I feel like just like those stats kind of like horrify you before the game, and that's what makes you make those nervous mistakes that we've seen in those games. So I definitely feel that was a great morale booster for the Arsenal players, and definitely we can compete head to head with City when the season goes on.
No, that's fantastic. And now, you know, it's definitely very positive news, yesterday's result. And, you know, as Premier League fans, we're really looking forward to, you know, a title challenge, especially this season. And I want to, you know, ask you, Abhi, you know, you had some experience around this, you know, especially being a Liverpool fan. There was a period where, you know, you really sort of went head to head with City, came out on top once, you know, really came close a couple of times, hit high 90s, hit mid 90s. But It was frustrating, sort of competing with the machine that Manchester City is. So if you were, to put yourself in the shoes of an Arsenal fan, Abhi, just from your previous experience, what would you suggest to them going head to head against this Manchester City side?
I think as an Arsenal fan, for everyone who is listening, I'd be so excited for the season because they had a great season last year, and exactly the same as Liverpool when they lost the first time to Madrid in the finals. Liverpool bought Van Dijk and Ali and Fabi also to an extent, and they sort of went on to win the CL, win the PL. And I think Arsenal's done a very similar thing where they've bought players that they need. They bought a Declan Rice, they've bought in Havertz, and I think it's just what is required to go on and sort of beat a City. My prediction from the beginning of the transfer window has been Arsenal will win the league because you're expecting City to drop off after a treble. But I mean, then again, it's Pep Guardiola. You never know what's coming.
Awesome. No, I think Abhi, I think that's a very fair assessment. It's difficult to go up against this City side. And Conrad, I know you have your views, especially in terms of Manchester City's dominance over the league in the last few years. Let you sort of address that briefly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I'll address my ideas on why City. I don't necessarily think they're going to drop off next year. I will say, looking at Arsenal, from the little that I've seen, I do think that Timber is going to be one of the top three signings of the league. I think that that's a massively underrated signing. There's been, at least from my perspective, a lot more kind of talk about Rice, which I understand he's a statement signing given the price. But I think the versatility and quality, that combination that Timber brings to Arsenal's defense, is going to be extremely important. I worry, in terms of if I were an Arsenal fan, I would worry slightly about depth at midfielder, particularly if they're going to be playing with two holding mids like they did versus City. Of course, that might have just been an in-game tech for that particular game, but it seems that after kind of Rice and Partey in that position, the quality drops off very hard unless they're planning to throw, I don't know, Zinchenko in there or something. But generally speaking, to me, the team looks quite impressive. And I would expect them to compete with City, although I'll get into why I think City's going to win again later. But yeah.
That's awesome, Conrad. That's definitely a nice little topic we want to get stuck into. And before that, I'll quickly move to you, just to sort of address the signings in particular. I know, there's a lot of positivity around the Arsenal signings, although there have to be question marks, around any window, especially when it's in the amount of 200 million plus. In your opinion, do you think this is the best way or the best utility of the funds that Arsenal had this season? And what would your suggestions be if not?
I would say the jury is definitely out on the Kai Havertz signing. But I think what Arteta was looking for is depth in multiple positions. And Xhaka left and they needed an option up front as well because Jesus is always injured. And Nketiah towards the end of the season just showed that maybe he's not the most reliable option if you want to compete for the title. Havertz has experience playing on the wing. He has experience playing as a second striker. So I think the 65 million that they paid for him was more because of his versatility and that he can fill in so many positions, like Arnav said. I think the most important thing to consider here is I had read in an Athletic article that for teams who are looking to make the jump from outside top four to top four, it's relatively easy if you're a Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea or United because of the funds that are available and just because of how much pull that you have, because you can, players want to come and play for your club, play in these big stadiums in front of thousands of fans. But the jump that you make from an existing top four team to a title contending team is extremely difficult. And there are only a handful of players in world football who help you make that jump. And that is extremely difficult to make. And the scouting needs to be excellent. The profiling needs to be excellent. And the manager needs to have complete clarity in his thought process. And I think Arteta has nailed it. I think Timber is an extremely athletic centre-back. He can play right-back. And as he's shown, he can play left-back as well. He helps Arsenal play a high line even if one of Gabriel or Saliba is injured. He helps tuck in even if Zinchenko is injured. He can keep width if White is injured. So that's an excellent signing. 9 on 10 to 10 on 10 signing right there. And Declan Rice, I mean, what to talk about is tangibles. We've spoken so much about what he brings on the pitch. But I think in terms of the intangibles. I think they needed someone with Declan Rice's mentality, someone with the kind of leadership skills that he possesses. He's been West Ham captain at a very young age. He's already guided them to silverware. It might be Conference League, but for West Ham, we have to understand that's a pretty big deal. And he's a regular England starter, so the price might be high. But again, he immediately elevates the quality of the team on the pitch. He brings the ball carrying that Partey never brought. He brings the composure and his passing that Partey never got. He is probably a better off-the-ball player than Partey as well. His timing of his challenges is perfect. And you know, I think generally, they have made that leap pretty well. But the only reservation that I have is the Raya signing. I'm one of the biggest David Raya fans, and I've said at least 8 times, probably on every episode of this podcast, that United should go in for David Raya. But why I think Arsenal could have spent that money on winger depth and not relied on Reece Nelson, or on midfield depth and not relied on a Fabio Vieira or Emile Smith-Rowe, is because I think the difference in quality between Ramsdale and Raya is not so much as it is between, say, an Odegaard and an Emile Smith-Rowe, or a Saka and a Reece Nelson. And I think that quality could have been bridged better. I think Raya does bring something that probably Ramsdale does not have, which is Raya is very strong-headed. And Raya has a very mean long pass. And, you know, if Arsenal want to turn to plan Bs, which is play long passes and have a striker just hold up the ball and, you know, just go from there, like Onana brings or like an Alisson brings, then Raya is definitely, I do believe Raya is a better goalkeeper than Ramsdale. But I don't think it was worth the £25 million that they could have spent, you know, elsewhere to bridge the quality gap. But besides that, I think Arsenal have done really well. It was months of effort. They laid the groundwork on the Rice deal a long time back. The Timber deal, I've been hearing that Arteta spoke to Timber well in advance of the deal actually taking place. So they've been putting in effort. Edu and Arteta have done a great job. And now it's up to the Arsenal boys to really, you know, mount a PL challenge at least. Maybe the CL is a bit too far, because teams like Real Madrid, who play so well on the counter-attack, playing against Arsenal's high line, I think it might be more difficult against the likes of Bayern and Madrid. But over 38 games, I think Arsenal do have a team that can compete, and I expect them to go toe-to-toe and probably even win it.
Yeah, I would just like to hop in and like kind of also like touch on a few things that you also said. I feel like the David Raya signing, like especially, is kind of like, I don't think like that signing specifically, like we were not going to sign, like we were not linked to any right wing this season anyway. So I don't think it was like an either or signing. So that is something that Arteta also kind of mentions, like having that competition. But yesterday itself, like Ramsdale's performance, he was like the man of the match yesterday. Like he made us win that game yesterday. His saves, his distribution, and the combination of like having Havertz up top with those long balls, and like we always were having those balls in possession. So I feel like if it helps bring in that consistency in Ramsdale, I would definitely take Ramsdale as my number one. And like I feel that is definitely a good problem for Arsenal to have, having two amazing goalkeepers. That's never like an issue. But yeah, I feel like that is one thing that we can definitely build on this season, and we can see like how it will go the season after, and there would be more clarity after this season that which keeper would be moving forward as the number one. And yeah, lastly, I feel like Arsenal can also compete in the Champions League, because for me personally, I feel a knockout competition is always more dependent on luck rather than a league in which you're playing every team twice. So I feel like even if you look at teams coming up in the last four, like I feel Milan in the final last season, nobody expected that. So definitely I feel like Arsenal can still compete in the Champions League, and I definitely would back them to do the same. And yeah, I feel like overall, just one negative, I feel like also Conrad mentioned that our squad depth, especially in the midfield, is kind of bleak. But I also had a similar reservation, if I'm super critical, because I thought that if we are signing Rice, we have Partey on the bench. But if both of them are starting, I feel that is something that we don't have. We have like Elneny injured right now, but I feel like he's not someone that can win us the Premier League or the Champions League. So I feel like man management is something that will be of utmost importance for Arteta this season, especially like the midfield, how to like rest those players in like the games that are not important, because we all know like he's kind of like a manager who wants to win every game, and like even like pre-season he's been a bit like he could give minutes to other players. But Yeah, I feel like that's the only concern that I have is like how to rest Rice. But yeah, I feel like in the past, if we look at Rice, he has brilliant stamina. Even in the last game, he like from the first minute to the 90th minute, the quality never dropped. So let's hope that Rice can stay fit, Partey stays fit. And yeah, I'm looking forward to a good season.
Thanks for that, Arnav. And, you know, I know you're short on time and you may have to leave us shortly. But before you go, if you can just give us your top four predictions, Arnav. I know it's a tough ask and it's too early to say, but if you had to go out on a hunch.
So for me, top four, definitely I would go for Arsenal, City, United. I feel that's locked in for me. And for the fourth position, I feel Liverpool could definitely make the cut for number four, but because the only thing is I don't see Chelsea being consistent, and yeah, that's the only thing. So I would say Liverpool comes in the top four, and Chelsea I feel like would finish like a close fifth. So I feel that's something. Spurs took a huge hit. I feel like Spurs won't be like in the near top six, but yeah, I would go with Liverpool for top four.
Thank you. Thank you, Arnav. Appreciate your Arsenal insight as always. And, you know, I know you're short on time, but we'll see you very shortly. Speaking of Liverpool, it's probably the most interesting team this season for me, especially. I've really followed them very keenly in terms of what Klopp has been doing. And I see Abhi nodding his head. And, you know, it's interesting because they've clearly had to go through a substantial rebuild. In midfield, they've had a few things to sort out, especially with their game style, with Trent inverting. And these are all of these things that we spoke about the last time around. Abhi, what are your thoughts? It just feels like Liverpool is going to be that side that tells other teams or invites other teams to score three against them just so they can go out there and score five. That's probably been the trend of preseason. And, you know, as a neutral, I'm thoroughly enjoying watching this side play with so much gusto. But what are your thoughts as a Pool fan? Is this something you're used to from a club system?
Firstly, I'd like to start off by saying that I think Arnav is on spice. Putting Liverpool in the top four, you should be banned from any podcast. Secondly, I think we're going to have an extremely entertaining season. That doesn't mean good. That just means entertaining. In the sense, if you go back to Klopp when he had the Milner, Wijnaldum, Henderson midfield, where there was no real defensive midfielder, but all three of them were hustling and doing work. And I feel like it's going to be exactly the same. We're going to have three mids that are just running up and down throughout the game. There's going to be no definite number six. I think that's what he has to go for unless he gets Lavia in. If I say what I'm most excited to watch, it is Cody Gakpo. I absolutely love Cody Gakpo. I think he's got everything an attacking player needs. He can hold the ball up, he can finish, he can cross, he can pass. He's pretty much got it all. I want to see how he performs throughout the season. I feel like McAllister and Sobo will sort of be cut at their legs, if I must say. That might be too harsh, but they need that cover, right? You need McAllister. You need someone at six so that McAllister can play those passes. You need someone at six so that Sobo can go out and attack. And I think that without a number six, without a Lavia or Fabinho, it's just not going to be possible. But regardless, we're going to have extremely entertaining games. I'm expecting at least 3-4 goals every game for both teams, of course. And you're also going to see Klopp completely losing his shit midway through the season. Also bad start to the season, but yeah, Cody Gakpo, just watch out. He's going to be, I think, one of the best attackers this year. And if you're talking about my predictions, I am going to again put Arsenal first because I feel like City has to drop off. City will come second, United third, and I'm gonna place Newcastle at fourth just because that midfield is so fucking packed. It's brilliant. I love the Newcastle midfield. I love their full team, all heart. And I think Newcastle surely makes top four again with the funds they have. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. You're looking at a disappointing season for the Liverpool fan. Honestly, we get top four and we should be celebrating.
Yeah, I will say, I think that Liverpool, more so than any other of kind of the typical big teams in the Prem, to me seem like they have a transfer window that's not done yet. like if it ends now, then that's you're in big problems. But it feels like there's genuine kind of space for purchases for that six that you're talking about, just in general, kind of. I mean, I think the only purchases that you've really done have been what, McAllister and Shoboslai, right? Pretty much. I also think, or hope, I guess, that this is a season where we get a full season of Luis Diaz, because he's one of the more electric players that are kind of out there and operating, and it felt like we didn't really get to see that fully last time. So if we're talking about an all-attacking, flowing Liverpool team, I think he's going to be a big part of that.
I mean, I'd just like to quickly jump in here. I think I get the negativity that Liverpool fans have and how critical they've been about the window. But like Conrad said, it's one team that's surely not done yet. I mean, I will be shocked if Liverpool don't buy Romeo Lavia at the end of it. You don't really pursue a player for 2 months, bid up to £45 million and just drop out of negotiations. I think Southampton are in a position where they need to raise money as well. So I do see this deal going through. I do have reservations about Lavia operating as a six because I think he's better as a conservative eight. But I mean, if Klopp finds a solution to that, they could really have a top four season or perhaps even challenge for the title. Maybe that's going too far considering the defensive frailties. But I just believe that in terms of goals, Liverpool just has so many goals in that front five. The options that they have, they perhaps have the best attack on paper. I think on left wing, they have Jota and Diaz. And both different profiles. Jota gets into the box as an aerial threat. You know, he hops in with goals. And Diaz is just electric. He can stretch the defences. And, you know, he's a really good dribbler. And in front of goal, they have Darwin Nunez. I think Klopp recently said that he's not completely sold on Nunez as a striker role because of his lack of defensive output. And he thinks Gakpo presses better and works harder. So I do see Cody Gakpo starting. But Nunez is... so exciting. Nunez runs the channels. Nunez can cross. He can play as a left winger as well. So I really see him going into the season. And it's a great luxury to have these two. And on right wing, they have, in my opinion, the best player in the Premier League. Haaland can score 80 goals if he wants, 100 goals if he wants. But Mohamed Salah is the best player in the Barclays Premier League and has been for the last 4 to 5 years. And just the guarantee of goals that Liverpool has is such a big luxury. And that's why I think they will definitely compete for top four. I think the problem is the defense. I think Virgil van Dijk's drop-off has been steep. He has, after his ACL injury, I just think he's not just lost a yard, but he's lost a few yards. He's he just drops off too much. He gives shooters too much space, you know, to shoot and to operate and dribble into spaces. So I think they need to work on that. I'm looking for if Ibrahima Konate can have an injury-free season, that will be a really big plus for Jurgen Klopp because I believe he's the best centre-back at Liverpool right now. He's so fast. He covers for 10 because of his recovery pace. He's a great ball carrier. He passes really well. And I think Konate is a big, big plus on that side. If Trent can fix up defensively, just like a lot of Liverpool fans think that the new haircut will really propel Trent to his old form. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he does with the responsibility of vice-captain on him as well. If he plays a tucked-in role in the 3-1-6 system in possession, or you know, if he just plays his usual role, you know, running out wide and just spamming crosses from the right half space and getting 10 assists even if he has the worst season of his life. I'm really looking forward to that as well. Another problem would be, like I said on last season's episode, if Liverpool stick to the three at the back in possession, Robertson cannot be playing as a left centre-back. He is not a good passer from deep areas and Robertson's best role is running the left flank up and down, you know, energy all the time, putting in those mean crosses. And I mean, I'd really like to see more of that from Robertson than seeing him in an LCB role, you know, where he has to pass from deep. So if Liverpool can fix that problem, you know, fix up in defense and show more concentration and, you know, not have concentration lapses like Trent and Van Dijk had all of last season, and probably make sure Lavia works at six and, you know, develop him into a six who works more at breaking play. And, you know, then just carrying the ball out of the press that he already does so wonderfully. I think Liverpool could be looking at a season where they make top four.
Just going to jump off what Advait said. Firstly, completely disagree. Not on any of the previous things, just on the top four bit. I think, yeah, defensive frailties, 100%. We haven't bought any new defensive players, so that's a huge minus. But even if the window goes on successfully and we sign Romeo Lavia, the problem with our midfield is we have 7 midfielders, out of which 4 are Elliot, Curtis, Thiago and Bajcetic. Thiago is forever injured, and the three of them are very young, extremely young, and just inexperienced, right? So if any of the three new buys drops out, has an injury, we're gone. Like, our midfield is pretty much reliant on these young guys or an injury-prone Thiago, which I just don't see pan out like well for us throughout the season, which is why I'm putting Liverpool outside of the top four. But that's me all the time. So let's see how it goes.
Just to quickly address, something that you said, the midfield, right? It's important to address the elephant in the room, and, that's the departures of the captain, and Fabinho. It's been a shock for outsiders, especially. I think Klopp was preparing for a season with Fabinho at the base. To lose Fabinho and to lose Henderson, to lose Milner, to lose Firmino, to lose Oxlade as well in one season. It does look like the dressing room itself lacks a little bit of experience. And, this is going off of some of the quotes I'd read earlier, where Henderson was sort of the good cop and Milner was the bad cop, the captain, the vice captain, and they kept switching around. Klopp, of course, apart from being highly, intelligent as a tactical manager, he is a brilliant man manager as well. Abhishek, how do you think he deals with the loss, he's going to be facing in the dressing room, and who do you think replaces these folks in the leadership position, really?
The problem with the leadership position, right? You have Van Dijk coming in as captain, who I personally think, and completely agree with Adwait, has a massive drop-off, right? And when you have a captain who is probably not performing to his abilities, you're going to have the rest of the players also sort of demoralized. And then you have Trent as vice-captain. Yeah, he is a Liverpoolian, which will sort of invigorate the crowd, if nothing. But I think the problem is in the locker room, right? You don't have enough leaders. Maybe, and this in my head is what's going to happen, is Mohamed Salah and Robertson actually step up. Because I actually see them do that, with Mohamed Salah being captain of Egypt, having that experience, also being one of the best players in the PL, you automatically look up to him. And Robertson, same, captain of Scotland, great player. You know he's going to put in effort, a lot like Milner, you'd say, just with the hard work. And I see these two players maybe manage it, but bad scenes in the dressing room. I'm very, very scared, nervous, anxious for the season.
Honestly, as neutrals, we're really looking forward to what's going to happen with Liverpool. Of course, we hope that they don't, reach their peak form. But for the league, I think it'll be good for, it'll be good for the Premier League to have a strong Liverpool side this season. I'm looking forward to it. And, before I know you don't have to get back to work, but before you do go, if you can leave us with your top four predictions, Abhi. And I hope that you have Liverpool in there.
No Liverpool. Sorry to disappoint, guys. But I have Arsenal at first because I really do believe in Arsenal. I've believed in Arteta throughout. I have been an Arteta fan since the minute he came in. So I will put Arsenal first. Also, great CL run. You guys are not seeing it, but I'm telling you, Arsenal is going to reach the CL semis. Arsenal, City, United, Newcastle. That is my top four.
Thank you, Abhi. Really appreciate it. We're going to take off of, one of the, the teams Abhi mentioned, and that is Manchester United. We're United fans, myself and Adwait, we're on the pod, and, we're sort of really looking forward to the season. There's a lot of good stuff happening at the club. It does feel like we've not had a window like this in a very long time. And, we've been skeptical of the club in terms of how they run, who the owners are, who the management is, the way they go about their business. They don't sell, they don't buy effectively. But it just feels like the month of July has probably been the best month of my life. From a football point of view, we've signed Mason Mount in the very beginning of July. 2 weeks on, we signed Andre Onana. Just last week, we've announced Rasmus Højlund. It does look like we've addressed every position we needed addressing. Bid for Harry Maguire has just come in, and that may open up some funds to sign another centre-back. And I'm hoping that's Jean-Claire Todibo. We also are in the market for another holding DM, and that could be Sofyan Amrabat. Adwait, I want to go to you. it does look like, and I'm going to get a little passionate over here, but Ten Hag's probably changed my life. And I don't know if he's done the same to you, but what's the vibe around United? Are you feeling the energy? Are you feeling that we may not win the title, but we'll be a better team than we've been in the last 7-8 years?
I mean, I definitely agree with you there that it's probably been one of the best summers that United have had in a long, long time, even if we are not to get Toribio and Amrabat over the line. But I also think that even when Mourinho was back, even when Solskjaer was back, there was always an air of negativity because there was always a big signing who didn't sign for United. At the end of a great window, we'd still look back and say, oh, if we signed Frenkie de Jong, if we signed Jadon Sancho, if we signed Toby Alderweireld in the 2017-18 season under Mourinho. And we've always started the season with that kind of negativity that what if we had that player? What if we had that player? This time, Ten Hag has been provided all the tools. There were three positions that he earmarked as early as March to the United board, that if you give me these three positions, I will make a bid for the title. He has been given not just his three positional targets, but his number one choices in all the positions. So as United fans, it's a pretty foreign land to be in where the manager's got all his targets. He's got all his number one targets in through the door. And there are reasonably good prices. I believe there are reasonably good prices for the value that they bring to the team. And Maguire and McTominay's departures will only accelerate what I thought would come next summer, because I thought a new holding DM to gradually replace Casemiro, someone who is more comfortable in possession, someone who brings that same sort of energy, same sort of dueling, who's so good at ground duels and aerial duels like Casemiro is, a centre-back to replace Maguire, who eventually replaces Varane in the 11, because Varane is A, injury-prone, B, aging, and C, not as comfortable on the ball as you'd want a Ten Hag right centre-back to be, since he relies on only his four defenders for ball progression and not really a holding DM or a midfielder to drop into the back three. So I believe that is something that United would have done next summer or in January. But if McTominay and Maguire are to leave, and bless Arsenal for paying West Ham 105 million great British pounds to spend, and if they are to offer us, say, 70 million to 75 million pound package for both of them, it would just fast track our progress and, you know, help us get these two into the door really quickly and, you know, gear them up to replace Casemiro and Varane eventually. But I think in terms of excitement, this is as excited as I've been for a season. The football's looking really good. United has really nice build-up structures in play that they're going after game after game. And, you know, there's a sort of consistency. Like, in all the past seasons, it's just been so erratic. Every game, there's a new formation. Every game, there are three or four new players coming into the team. And after a point, it got so annoying because, you know, you want the best players to play every week. You want your team to play a certain system. You want your team to have a formation. And you want your team to have a game style. And like last season as well, like, while I agree, it was a great season from a United point of view. Under Rangnick, we finished, what, sixth? And, you know, at the end of it, we really hated football. Ten Hag came back and he really made us, like, enjoy football again. But at the same time, we couldn't play the football that he really wanted to play. And that, a lot of it was down to David De Gea's deficiencies in goal. And I had said on the podcast earlier that just replacing De Gea would be an 8-on-10 window. And I still believe that. But little did I know that United would not only replace De Gea, but replace him with probably the best distributor of the ball among all goalkeepers in the world football. So I think the De Gea to Onana jump is massive. And even in preseason games, you can just see that, you know, in moments where De Gea was pressed, he would just hoof it up. The other team's centre-backs would win an aerial duel and they'd start an attack. In those same positions, Onana keeps his calm and plays lofted passes to the full-backs, finds the holding DM. So I think just generally, United are much more adept at keeping the ball now and, you know, building play from deep. And I think that's really going to be important against low blocks and against big teams. I remember the FA Cup final where it was just disastrous, because there you see Edison not clearing the ball even once and just playing short passes. And De Gea, even if he sees Haaland from like a 50-meter yardstick, he hoops the ball up just because he's scared. I mean, I don't see that happening this season. I see United going toe-to-toe with the big teams and actually trying to play out from the back. But in terms of expectations from the season, I still believe that with Arsenal's window and the fact that Arteta's project has been going on for 3 to 4 years now, I think Arsenal are a couple of steps ahead of United in terms of how far the project has come and how the players are responding to Arteta's tactics and different shapes that he's trying in and out of possession. And Man City is Man City. They've just come off a treble and they're the best team that football has probably ever seen after Pep, Barca. So that's a machine there. So I do see these two teams finishing above United. But at the same time, I expect United to play a much better brand of football than they did last time. Have some sort of consistency and be closer to the top than we were last time. After a point in the last 8 game weeks, United were battling for top 4 again. I see the last 8 game weeks of this season us being closer to Man City or Arsenal, whoever is at the top, playing a much better brand of football and hopefully, you know, translate it to the UCL where we go toe-to-toe with, you know, heavyweights like Madrid or Bayern. We won't be beating them, but, you know, just make a game out of it.
No, honestly, that's, you know, pretty thorough. And, you know, I'm going to pick off of some of the things that you said and, you know, bounce it back to Conrad. Now, the first thing, Conrad, I want to ask you, and I'm hoping you can address this in, you know, some amount of detail. The first thing, Conrad, I want to ask you is these exorbitant prices. You know, as Premier League fans, we probably think that a £64 million striker is a bargain. And that's probably because we've been spoiled over the last 10 or 12 years. But you have so much more exposure to the other leagues in terms of how sustainable clubs are run. What do you have to say about the prices that are being quoted at the Premier League? That's one on a very general level. And on the United front, Conrad, if you can make a comment on the demands of a Champions League campaign. Of course, we've only been in Europe last season, and you understand Champions League at, you know, at a more granular level than perhaps we do, Conrad, since you watch, you know, the lengths and breadths of it. Conrad, what do you think is going to be the impact of a Champions League campaign on this club?
Yeah, so I found it interesting that Advait, that you said these represented good value. That's a wild statement to me. I think you heavily overpaid, but I also want to say with a caveat that I don't actually think it matters both to Man United and just to the Prem as a whole, although there's different levels there, right? But in terms of good value signings for strikers, I do actually, the striker market right now is extremely inflated. I do think there were good value signings to be had. Chelsea with Nico Jackson is one of them. I think they got him for 35, and that's still kind of edging it. You had Loïs Ikomaopenda, who is one of the top scorers in France, who went to Red Bull Leipzig, I think, for 30 million. And then Inter just brought in Marcus Thuram for free. And that's a striker who was ripping it apart in the Bundes, picked up on a free. And, you know, you're comparing that to Højlund, who is coming in he had 9 goals, I think, with Atlanta, and he's coming in for 60-something. That's not value. But I think it does show something about the fact that the Prem is going, or not the Prem is going in the right direction, that Man United is going in the right direction, that they put aside any sort of a push for value and just bought the players that Ten Hag wanted. Look, are they value? No. Onana, 50 million, that's a lot of money to pay for a goalkeeper, especially when you see that Inter is pulling in his replacement, Sommer, for what, 6? Does it matter? No, you're right. You're getting an immense upgrade on De Gea. In terms of the overall prices for the Prem, I think it's crazy that I was looking into this the other day. I think 10 out of 20 of the Prem sides currently in the market, although obviously that can change, have over a 50 million transfer deficit. And of those 10 that don't have over 50 million, 6 of them are above 20 million. That's just completely insane by the metrics of any other league. There's no other leagues that come close to being able to do that. That just wouldn't be considered sustainable. But it doesn't matter because the Prem, because of the TV deal, is generating a situation where even the smallest clubs in the Prem can spend that kind of money and not necessarily have to worry about it. I think it leads to the Prem buying a lot of overpriced players. But I also think that it doesn't matter as much for Prem teams if they buy overpriced players, because they're just able to kind of take that financial burden and move forward with it anyway. I just, this is slightly off topic, but looking at Arsenal, and I was super surprised by the amount of, if you look at their transfer market window, like on the website, a bunch of their incoming people are players who I haven't heard mentioned in 3 or 4 years who are coming in on loan. Pepe, Suarez, Pablo Mari, Nuno Tavares, Renarsson, who are just these players who they took swings at, who didn't play, And it actually doesn't financially matter to the team that they didn't play out in a way that other teams wouldn't, other leagues specifically wouldn't be able to take on. But, you know, if you have the money, which the Premier League does and which Manchester United most definitely does, then it doesn't matter that you're overspending as long as you're getting what you want. As to the Champions League, I think that you guys were already in Europe. And I think that Man United has a lot of experience with that. And in some ways, I think that Man United's depth is actually going to be put under a bit less pressure than Arsenal's depth is, because I was looking at both of those and wondering how the Man United or how the Champions League would kind of affect those teams. I think that there's a lot of young players at Man U who are going to take the chance of the fact that you guys have more high importance games, that it's not as easy to kind of disregard the Champions League as it is to disregard the Europa or disregard the, you know, UEFA Conference League if you're in there. I think it's going to be a breakout season for Garnacho, or I'm hopeful that it's going to be a properly breakout season for Garnacho. But when you have more of these kind of high intensity games and high importance games, games that you don't necessarily want to lose, I think there's going to be maybe more rotation in the Prem. But I don't inherently think that United's going to have too rough of a time with that. Depending especially on if you guys are able to pull off that Amrabat signing and the Todibo signing. I think an Amrabat signing would be another one of those kind of top five signings in the league. I think he's an incredible player and perfect for what you guys would be wanting. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my long-winded take.
That's Conrad. You know, honestly, in terms of, you know, Champions League depth, we definitely require some more perspective in terms of how to go about it. And, you know, we're probably gonna have to cut, you know, this episode short since we're running, you know, sort of tight on time. We do want to cover more teams as the episodes go along. But before we do end, Adwait, if you can give us your top four for the season, and then, you know, Conrad, if you can do the same.
No, so I'll go for my top four. I think I'm going to go with Arsenal first. I think my simple reason is that I think Arsenal has strengthened and City simply haven't gotten stronger. I know getting Josko Guardiola and doubling down on the 4CB approach, City might keep a lot of clean sheets and their box defending really, really improves. But I just think that losing Gundogan and Mahrez, City have lost magic and City have lost a lot of goal contributions and important moments that will not be replaced. Unless they sign someone special after I say this, of course, which is a big concrete possibility. But I think Alvarez, Grealish, Haaland, Kovacic, all these players they have, they're all hardworking players. They all press their socks off. But just the ability of Mahrez and Gundogan to come up in clutch moments and, you know, rescue City. I just think that is going to be extremely difficult. Extremely, extremely difficult to replace, especially for Mahrez. Because in so many cup games, if you notice how Mahrez has performed in cup games, in so many cup games when they're playing their B team, Mahrez comes and just scores a random hat-trick or comes and scores one goal and provides two assists to save City in these cup games where, you know, he's basically carrying them. I think that's going to be extremely difficult to replace. So I see City dropping to second, Arsenal coming first. I think United come third, the same as last time, but United are much closer to Arsenal and City this time and actually kind of are in the title run until, say, game week 20 to 25. And my fourth place is probably an interesting pick and something that Arnab and Abhishek clearly don't agree with. But I see Mauricio Pochettino's Chelsea coming in fourth. And I see them being extremely close to United as well. I think it's a big factor that Pochettino's squad does not have UCL football to play, does not have any kind of European football to play. They just have one game a week. They definitely have quality and I believe they will get Moises Caicedo over the line. And Caicedo and Enzo will probably make one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. And if you're giving this high-energy bunch of players who are trained by a good modern coach that I rate a lot, Mauricio Pochettino, and if they are to play just once a week, that's an extremely dangerous prospect. And I do see Chelsea taking fourth place and having a really, really good season and then, you know, taking it off from there.
No, that's awesome. You know, Adwait, Conrad, you next. You know, there are some interesting things Adwait has said that I do want to pick on, you know, towards the end, but Conrad, right at you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to take a different track, I think, to everybody else who's commented. I'm going to say City are going to take first by a pretty significant margin, actually. I think they're going to make it four in a row. If I'm on the episode where we talk about City in depth, I'll get into why, but I think they have all the tools necessary to... I think they have the tools and I think they have, or can have, at least the motivation to deal with the kind of continuous championship malaise that happens sometimes. I think they're going to be able to push past that. I think Pep is very good at motivating past that, and I think they'll take first. And then, realistically speaking, what I think is going to happen is you're going to have them first, Arsenal second, Man United first, and fourth, really one of Chelsea or Spurs. But there's a part of me that wants to throw a random thing out there, which is to just take Arsenal, Man United, put them in third and fourth, and put one of Chelsea or Spurs in second, just based off a freak occurrence of one of those two coaches, Pochettino or Postecoglou, getting things right and having luck in terms of their key players balling out, Nkunku balling out for Chelsea, Kane staying with what just happened with Bayern's bid getting replaced or something like that, and Spurs having a scenario where Kane really pushes them to kind of second with Postecoglou working through. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. I think the realistic answer is Arsenal's going to take second, but I don't know. There's a world out there where I see, yeah, one of Chelsea or Spurs getting second, pipping Arsenal and Man U, who are dealing with kind of that extended European UCL participation. And yeah, it'd be fun, I think.
Thank you, Conrad. You know, I do hope that we get to do a hot takes episode, you know, somewhere down the line where we can sort of, you know, throw these at each other. You know, it's been an incredible episode. I think we've covered Arsenal, we've covered Liverpool, and we've covered United. We do hope to cover some other big hitters. We want to cover Man City, Spurs, as well as Chelsea. There are some very interesting teams, you know, that are just knocking the doors of the top six. We've got Aston Villa. We've got, of course, Newcastle, who are playing the Champions League. We've got Brighton, who've significantly strengthened despite losing some key players. We do have a very exciting Premier League season, and we do want to cover these teams on a later episode. But for now, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for keeping us in your ears. We look forward to coming back next week with another review with more teams. And thank you again. Just in case, since nobody asked, I'm going to give my top four predictions. I do think, just like you, Conrad, I think Man City take this. They're too strong. They're the most dominant team in the world right now. I don't see a world in which anybody can beat them. I do hope, and I'm going to go out on a hunch and say Man United comes second. I don't see Arsenal coping as well with Champions League just yet. I do see Arsenal coming third, and I'm going to go out on a hunch and say Brighton finish fourth, but that's probably for a hot takes episode. But thank you again, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you again from the Football Road family.